medicine. Knowing the above, it's not surprising that every PCR kit includes a manufacturer's warning: do not use this kit as the sole basis for detecting HIV infection, or similar labeling. Gallo's leap from correlation to causation troubled Mullis from the outset. PCR made it easier to see that certain people are infected with HIV, and some of those people came down with symptoms of AIDS, but that doesn't begin, even, to answer the question, does HIV cause it? Human beings are full of retroviruses. CD4 tests. Similar deficiencies plague tests that count CD4 plus helper T cells. AIDS doctors look at low CD4 cell counts as the key marker for AIDS diagnoses. However, not a single study confirms this most important principle of the HIV-only theory, that HIV destroys CD4 cells by means of an infection. Furthermore, even the most significant of all AIDS studies, the 1994 Concord study, questions using helper cell counts as a diagnostic test for AIDS. The problem is the use of a surrogate endpoint, which is notoriously imprecise. Many studies corroborate the skepticism. One of these is the 1996 paper, Surrogate Endpoints in Clinical Studies, Are We Being Misled? Published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, the paper concludes that CD4 T cell count in the HIV setting is as uninformative as a toss of a coin. In other words, not at all. Mullis added, "Now, is there a test that can definitively tell you if you are infected with the virus? What is that test?" The party line, at all costs, or else. Critics of the HIV-AIDS hypothesis invariably cite Koch's postulates as the most profound embarrassment for Gallo's theory. In 1884, Nobel laureate Robert Koch, the father of bacteriology, first outlined the classical methodologies for proving causation between a pathogen and a disease. Summarizing Koch's postulates for the Journal of Investigative Dermatology, Julia A. Segre wrote, "As originally stated, the four criteria are: 1. The microorganism must be found in diseased but not healthy individuals. 2. The microorganism must be cultured from the diseased individual. 3. Inoculation of a healthy individual with the cultured microorganism must recapitulate the disease. And finally, 4. The microorganism must be re-isolated from the inoculated diseased individual and matched to the original microorganism." Koch's postulates have been critically important in establishing the criteria whereby the scientific community agrees that a microorganism causes a disease. Virologists, and every trial lawyer and judge, consider Koch's four criteria the gold standard for proof that a particular microorganism causes a particular malignancy. The problem of AIDS without HIV. Koch's first postulate requires that a truly pathogenic virus can be found in large quantities in every patient suffering from the disease. The failure of the HIV-AIDS hypothesis to meet this critical threshold remains one of Dr. Fauci's most exasperating dilemmas. For starters, Gallo claimed that he found HIV virus in fewer than half of the ailing AIDS patients from whom he drew blood. Furthermore, every one of the 30 discrete illnesses we now call AIDS occurs also in persons uninfected by HIV. In fact, AIDS commonly occurs in people who test HIV negative. If HIV is truly the only cause of AIDS, this should not be possible. Soon after Robert Gallo's historic announcement, doctors around the country, and CDC officials started seeing patients with low CD4 counts and signature AIDS diseases like PCP and immune system dysfunction, but who tested negative for HIV. Many of the victims were white heterosexual women. Dr. Fauci and the CDC kept this awkward information secret. Fauci funded AIDS researchers, Dr. Fauci's PIs, also kept mum when they encountered such patients. By 1992, media science writers also knew about these HIV-free AIDS cases, but they dutifully self-censored while awaiting signals from Dr. Fauci and the medical cartel. Lawrence Altman, the chief medical writer for the New York Times, confessed to Science magazine that he did not break the story because he didn't think it was his paper's place to announce something without the CDC's go-ahead. Then, in the first days of the 1992 Amsterdam AIDS conference, a naive young Newsweek reporter, Jeffrey Cowley, innocently reported a cascade of cases of non-HIV AIDS that he uncovered during quiet confessional conversations with Dr. Fauci's AIDS researchers. Several scientists confided to Cowley their bewildered alarm at the large number of AIDS patients who were uninfected with HIV. Cowley's report almost precipitated the collapse of Dr. Fauci's entire, carefully fortified, HIV-only theology. "The patients are sick or dying, and most of them have risk factors," Cowley reported in Newsweek. He described a dozen such cases of non-HIV patients with AIDS-like symptoms, including brain lesions, corresponding cognitive deficits, chronic aggravation of herpes viruses, depleted C4 cells, PCP pneumonia, and immune system collapse. What they don't have is HIV. The Newsweek article shattered the taboo. Conferees took the public disclosure as a signal that they could now discuss the previously verboten subject of AIDS patients without HIV. Dr. Fauci's researchers, gathered in Amsterdam, an ocean away from his heavy hand, suddenly began sharing their own stories of AIDS without HIV across the United States and Europe. With the floodgates opened by Newsweek threatening to sweep away Dr. Fauci's official orthodoxy, Dr. Fauci raced out to Andrews Air Force Base with CDC AIDS Task Force Director James Curran and flew to the Netherlands on Air Force 2 on a mission to quell the uprising. Curran, the head of the CDC's AIDS division, had famously conspired with Gallo to take the antibody patent from the French. But by the time the two bureaucrats arrived, the horse had left the stable. Dr. Fauci and Curran had to sit through a series of rollicking conference sessions as mobs of reporters, mutinous scientists, and enraged activists besieged them with case studies and unanswerable questions. Public health regulators, physicians, and researchers expressed indignation that Dr. Fauci hadn't come clean with them. Many physicians caring for AIDS patients were furious that the government agency had not informed them about the non-HIV AIDS cases. Curran confessed that the CDC had known about these cases for years. He feebly protested, "These are not cases of AIDS," reasoning with circular gymnastics that they couldn't be AIDS since the definition of AIDS requires the presence of HIV. Dr. Fauci weakly reassured the gathering that he would soon resolve the crisis. The New York Native reported that Dr. Fauci, the little man with the compensatory ego, looked like he was going to have a nervous breakdown in Amsterdam. "We kept waiting to see him curled up in a fetal position and crying hysterically, desperate for forgiveness, desperate to create a smokescreen to make everyone forget how he has elbowed every critical question about HIV out of the way." Dr. Fauci was trying to sell himself as an open-minded scientist. He was telling people, "Don't panic, don't panic." In the weeks following the Amsterdam conference, the number of cases identified in the United States alone continued to grow almost daily. Within a few weeks, The escalating cascade forced CDC to admit to 82 certified cases in 15 states. It was a pitiful underestimate. Duesberg sent a letter to Science offering to provide a list of references to more than 800 HIV-free immunodeficiencies and AIDS-defining diseases in all major American and European risk groups, along with references to more than 2,200 HIV-free African AIDS cases. Duesberg afterward identified more than 4,000 documented AIDS cases in the peer-reviewed scientific literature in which there is no trace of HIV or HIV antibodies. This number is impressive because Dr. Fauci had cultivated strong institutional deterrence to such descriptions and because formal scientific papers never described the vast majority of AIDS cases. In an editorial for the Los Angeles Times, Steve Himoff allowed that reports of AIDS without HIV would appear to signal at least partial, temporary vindication of Duesberg. Describing Duesberg as the unofficial leader of the revisionists, an international star of virology long before anyone heard of AIDS, and not just another conspiratorialist, Himoff observed that Duesberg's arguments have the ring of common sense. If there is even a remote chance that Duesberg is correct, and the latest reports increase that possibility, then the powers that be must leap into action. New York native publisher Charles Ortleb commented, "It should have been the end of the HIV theory, and absolute proof that the CDC had gotten the definition and cause of AIDS wrong." The fact that HIV-negative AIDS was also occurring in chronic fatigue syndrome patients, CFS, fortified suspicions of many virus experts that AIDS and CFS were part of the same neuroimmunological epidemic. A large contingent of HIV-AIDS critics, although not Peter Duesberg, had been clamoring that CFS and AIDS were a single disease, neither caused by HIV. To derail this lethal heresy, Dr. Fauci had set the compass for the medical community's reprehensible dismissal of CFS as a psychosomatic illness. Following Dr. Fauci's lead, doctors dubbed CFS as yuppie flu, characterizing it as a neurotic affliction among women genetically unequipped for high-pressure corporate jobs that suddenly opened to them in the 1980s, coterminous with the lockstep pandemics of AIDS and CFS. A September 6, 1992 Newsweek article by Jeffrey Cowley asked, "AIDS or chronic fatigue?" Though Cowley took some heat for the article, he was merely voicing the quiet suspicion among many of Dr. Fauci's own PIs that non-HIV AIDS was actually CFS, and that CFS was simply another name for AIDS when it occurred in heterosexuals who tested negative for HIV. As more cases come to light, Cowley observed, it's becoming clear that the newly defined syndrome has as much in common with CFS as it does with AIDS. Tony Fauci moved quickly to silence this existential threat. 3 weeks after the Amsterdam riot, the CDC sponsored a special meeting at its Atlanta headquarters, inviting the scientists reporting HIV-free AIDS cases. In attendance was a doleful Cowley, the Newsweek journalist, by now on a short leash with a choke collar. In a brazen move to explain away the anomaly of AIDS without HIV, Dr. Fauci declared that the unexplained AIDS cases represented a new disease. To avoid suspicion that his new disease was, after all, CFS, Dr. Fauci labeled his discovery idiopathic CD4+ lymphocytopenia, or ICL. In this tongue twister, idiopathic means of unknown source. It might also have been Dr. Fauci's ironic play on the word idiot. But such was his wizardry that everyone just swallowed it without questions. The press meekly nodded at his circular reasoning, like religious zealots jotting down the words of an infallible pope. For the record, I believe that HIV is a cause of AIDS, but Dr. Fauci's acknowledgement of non-HIV AIDS shows that causation is more complex than the official theology. Dr. Fauci had somehow resuscitated his theory from certain death by erecting an arbitrary wall between AIDS with and sans HIV. Because there was no evidence the mystery illness was contagious, Dr. Fauci hazarded a guess to the tractable reporters that the blood supply was probably safe. He offered no evidence to support this assurance, and the kowtowing media requested none. That was more than enough for Cowley. Cowley, the Newsweek reporter, almost lost his career, Charles Ortlieb told me. Newsweek published a remorseful article, and Cowley stopped reporting on AIDS cases without HIV or even Dr. Fauci's new disease, ICL. Then, on August 18th, New York Newsday revealed that two of the non-HIV AIDS patients had chronic fatigue syndrome, reigniting the dangerous controversy. Dr. Fauci rushed to appear on CNN's Larry King Live to reassure the general public that the new illness was not a threat to people outside the AIDS risk groups. Writing in the New York Native, Nina Ostrom described Dr. Fauci's interview with King. King began by asking Fauci to describe what he thought was happening in the mysterious AIDS cases in which patients develop severe immunodeficiency and types of infections suffered by AIDS patients but are not infected with HIV. Fauci kept saying that between 20 and 30 such cases had been identified. Dr. Fauci knew that CDC had already confirmed 82 cases in 15 states, and Duesberg had found thousands documented in PubMed, the NIH official peer review archives. And because such a small number of people were affected, it really was nothing to worry about. Fauci said it wasn't clear that these cases represented a new type of AIDS. These patients' immunodeficiency could, he stressed, be caused by something other than an infectious agent. Fauci speculated that the cases might not even represent a new illness, but that increasingly sophisticated testing of people's immune systems was turning up what could be background immunodeficiencies, whatever that is. Ostrom described Dr. Fauci's awkward denial when one caller to the show asked whether the new mystery illnesses had anything to do with chronic fatigue syndrome. Fauci stated emphatically that it did not. Fauci was clearly uncomfortable talking about chronic fatigue syndrome, Ostrom reported, and couldn't quite figure out where to look, so his eyes darted everywhere. The show ended with an angry call from a physician in the Midwest who treats AIDS patients. He demanded to know why Fauci and other health officials had not informed physicians about the cases of non-HIV AIDS before the information appeared in Newsweek. Shouldn't the doctors know about this before the mass media? The doctor asked sarcastically. Fauci became very defensive, asserting that it had only become clear in the last couple of weeks that the non-HIV AIDS cases constituted a real phenomenon, and therefore there had previously been nothing to inform the physicians of. He did not look happy at the show's end. Ostrom added this observation: Fauci's good on television as long as he's being touted as President George Bush's hero or patted on the back for rushing toxic drugs through the approval process without adequate safety testing. But when reporters start acting like reporters, as they have since the non-HIV cases came to light, Fauci's thin skin gets him into trouble. He becomes defensive, condescending, and sarcastic. King initially scheduled Peter Duesberg to appear on the same show, and apparently canceled Duesberg at Dr. Fauci's insistence. The problem of HIV without AIDS. Koch's first postulate also requires that the suspected pathogen should only be found in sick individuals and never in healthy individuals. It is therefore equally frustrating for HIV-only aficionados that widespread PCR use quickly revealed hundreds of thousands of individuals with HIV and no sign of illness. Dr. Fauci initially predicted that all of these individuals would die of AIDS within 2 years. Later, he doubled their life expectancy to 4 years, and then to 8. Then he stopped talking about these upcoming tragedies altogether. Today, even Dr. Fauci's most loyal clergymen acknowledge that there are over 165,000 Americans and millions of individuals globally who carry the HIV virus without ill effect. According to CDC estimates, approximately 1/3 of HIV positives in the United States do not know their status. If this is the case, Harvey Bialy points out, there should be a huge number of people dying suddenly of AIDS. This is not happening. In fact, the vast majority of those who test positive for HIV remain healthy for years. Duisberg and other critics argued that there is meager proof that people with HIV alone will not live a normal lifespan. Dr. Fauci has also taken energetic precautions to ensure that nobody study the prevalence of healthy HIV-infected people. In July 1996, Newsday reported that Dr. Fauci had suddenly aborted a $16 million five-year study of the phenomenon midstream. According to journalist Lori Garrett's July 11th story in Newsday, key HIV contract is killed, some see retribution at hands of NIH official, was the largest study on HIV/AIDS ever commissioned, involving research from over 100 scientists from leading institutions, including Harvard, the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center in Manhattan, Northwestern University, Chicago, Duke University, North Carolina, and the University of Alabama. One of the study's central purposes was to examine the question that Dr. Fauci apparently didn't want answered, why some HIV-infected individuals never succumb to AIDS. The five-year contract, which began in 1994 to fund this collaboration, formerly named the Correlates of HIV Immune Protections, or CHIPS, has no parallel in U.S. AIDS research. Dr. Fauci's action effectively scuttled a year's worth of work by about 100 independent scientists. Aaron Diamond's Dr. David Ho told Garrett, "I'd like to see if Tony could find a contract anywhere in his portfolio that could match the productivity of this one." Newsday reported that the shocking cancellation was a retaliation against a group of younger scientists among this group who had signed a report, the Levine Report, that criticized NIH's policy of only funding research that supported Dr. Fauci's HIV/AIDS orthodoxies. "This is payback time for Tony Fauci," said AIDS activist Greg Gonsalves of Treatment Action Group, the offshoot of ACT UP, formed to openly receive pharma funding. He told Newsday, "It was an act of retribution by Tony Fauci, plain and simple." In reporting the incident, the New York native quoted NIAID insiders, New York native, July 22, 1996, complaining that Dr. Fauci had fostered a reprisal culture at NIH. They said that their boss's favorite expression was, "What goes around comes around." Gonsalves called the cancellation a vendetta against the young scientists in the group who dared to ask for science-based funding strategies. "It's just as likely that Dr. Fauci was searching for an excuse to terminate a study that threatened the entire HIV/AIDS paradigm." The problem with isolating the virus. Koch's second postulate is that the virus can be isolated from an ill individual and made to grow in pure culture. Highly respected scientists, including Etienne de Arvin, argued that HIV has never been isolated or grown in pure culture. Both Montagnier and Gallo have periodically acknowledged this deficiency.